Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Property and Local Tax Division to order. Hey, yes, there is. And we do have a quorum, so we are officially underway. Representative Anzo? I hate to break up a pleasant chat, but if you would. Representative Nelson, would you like to move? Which Representative Anzals, which bill do you prefer to do first? Well, Representative Anzal will be presenting Representative Dill's bill for him. Representative Dill is not available today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I've only had Representative Dill's bill for about 6 hours now, and because we have a testifier here from the St. Louis County Assessor's Office who has to get back, could we take that one first?
Absolutely.
1161?
Absolutely. Representative Nelson, would you like to move House File 1161 be before the division for possible inclusion in the division report?
Most definitely.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. So, House File 1161. Good afternoon, sir. Please state your name for the record, and I think we're relying on you for the testimony today. I'm sorry, Representative Anzal.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. I'll present the overview of the bill, and with me is Mr. Kerry Welsh, Assistant St. Louis County Assessor. Representative Dill is attempting in this legislation to solve a property tax problem that has been created by legislation that we passed in 2008 and legislation which went into effect in July of 2010. It pertains to seven counties of northeastern Minnesota: Kuching, Aiken, St. Louis, Itasca, Beltrami, Clearwater, and Cass. And essentially, they are faced with a property tax problem caused by a conservation easement which was given to and paid through the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Essentially, what has happened is that the recipient of the conservation easement received the funds for the conservation easement, then went to the Minnesota Tax Court and received a reduction in assessed market valuation for property taxes paid.
That's still pending.
That case is still pending. Clarification there. And what this bill intends on doing is correcting that situation in the future, and with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Welsh for additional detail.
Thank you, Representative Anzal. Mr. Welsh, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kerry Welsh. I'm, again, the Assistant St. Louis County Assessor in St. Louis County. One of my primary responsibilities is oversight of tax court issues in St. Louis County. Just a little background, the Lessard-Sams Fund basically paid out to UPM Blandin $43 million plus in July of 2010. They subsequently, January 2nd of 2010, for pay 2011, the easement was not in place, but they did file in tax court. Again, that's for pay 2011. They filed in tax court and submitted an appraisal to the tax court for $52 million. The basis of the appraisal was based on looking at all of their 187,000 acres over the seven counties as one economic unit. And primarily, they established the value based on the income approach, meaning the timber production value of the property. State statute tells assessors that we have to assess properties by parcel. Parcel, by definition, is contiguous acreage. When we're assessing it as assessors, we're looking at the size of the property, it may be 40s, 60s, 80s, 600-acre parcels, we're basically establishing the approach to valuing the properties based on similar-sized properties. Again, their position is that we own it as 187,000 acres, and as a business timber production, we would sell it as 187,000 acres. Therefore, we think you should assess it for $52 million. The subsequently, for 2012, again, when the easement was in place, they came back with an appraisal for $25,800,000. What they're suggesting is that there's been a loss of, or diminution of value because of the easement being in place. Again, that's been submitted to the courts. We have submitted an appraisal to the courts. It's being being litigated right now. I can give you a couple of examples again on how, if they're successful, that would affect the taxpayers in St. Louis County. And I have one example of a township in Itasca County. Again, the 83% of the easement is in 83% of the acreage is in Itasca County, and 12% is in St. Louis County. We have 22,520 acres for 2010 pay 11 with an assessed value currently of at that year of $17,316,300. The Sewell appraisal is the one that they followed. Will lower the property value to $5,064.68. That's an abatement of about $136,000. For 2011 pay 12, the assessed value is $16,905,300. That would the Sewell appraisal comes back again, taking into consideration conservation easement, comes back at $2,895,960. It's about an additional 50% reduction because of the, again, the conservation easement. The again, the position that it be valued as one economic unit has already been addressed in the Marlow versus Lake County Tax Court case, and so we don't know what the outcome of that is going to be. But I guess the issue here is the fact that, for all intents and purposes, they received $43 million from the state of Minnesota. We look at that, if you look at that as a prepayment on future, a loss of future benefits. And in turn, they're coming back and saying, we now have a diminished value on our property, and therefore we want our values reduced. We have one outlier. It's an example. It's an extreme, but in Spang Township in Itasca County, 67% of the revenue to the county comes from the land, the UPI land and property values, property taxes. So they'd be, there's 138 other taxpayers in the county, and that represents the income itself. I've got if you need it, but it would be a dramatic, if they're successful in getting a huge reduction, it would have a dramatic impact on their budget. We have spent $78,000 plus for an appraisal so far. The four counties that are involved in the four major counties involved in the process, plus countless hours of attorney's time and assessor's time in all four counties in defending against this this tax court case. So there's been quite a bit of money, basically, that's been invested by our taxpayers to, again, remedy what we feel is an unintended consequence of the original legislation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Welsh. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1161? Please come down, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tom Dibbing. I'm the Houston County Assessor and a member of the Legislative Committee for MAAO. Chairman Dabney and members of the committee, I'm representing as a member of MAAO and the Legislative Committee. We have some concerns on the bill. Our position statement that we have is for high quality annual assessments through uniform and consistent application of best assessment principles. And in valuation of in all valuation assignments, opinions of value are based on use. And the highest and best use analysis starts off with if it's physically possible, and then we jump into whether it's legally permissible. And if there's conservation easements that are out there, there's some, depending on what the easement is, there could be a loss of value in that property to the current owner and to possibly future owners. So our concern is how this is all taking place. We certainly understand the issue with where you have taxing jurisdictions that are have a lot of properties that are in an easement area, and the shift of taxes that goes from onto the existing property owners from the easement area. Our main issue, obviously, is that we keep this understandable and transparent to the property owners in that jurisdiction. So,
thank you, Mr. Dibbing. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair and members, if Representative Dill were here, the author of this bill, he'd say that this approximately 180,000 acres is forest land, wetlands. It's predominantly used by the public for recreation, outdoor sports, hunting, fishing, berry picking, bird watching, and other various and assorted outdoor activities. He would also say in plain and simple language that when the state of Minnesota gives you a conservation easement through the use of the Lessard Sams Legacy Fund, and you have been paying property taxes, as a consequence of getting that easement and that payment, in this case, slightly north of $40 million, it really isn't appropriate for you to turn around and then ask for a reduction in your assessed market value and therefore cause property tax ripples throughout the local government jurisdiction within the conservation easement. That's what he would say in plain and simple language.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think I would take issue a little bit with some of what's been stated. When we refer to highest and best use, that is just that, and that's what the conservation easement is being expended for, is to preserve that property and to not allow the property to be subdivided or used in a more intense use. So that is compensation for development rights or compensation for not having that property become developed to its highest and best use. And if it had, or if it was permitted to do that, then it would generate the tax capacity according to its highest and best use. So it seems reasonable in my mind that you not mix the two things together, arguing that compensation through a conservation easement is not justification for lowering the value. You have now permanently taken that property off of the potential of it being used for its highest and best use. And so, you know, I think there is a distinction there, and I would also ask whether or not this bill would be a detriment to preserving those lands which are most desirable to save from development. So that would be my comment.
Mr. Representative Anzels, can you speculate on
Representative
Hertas's question?
Hertas and Mr. Chairman and members, if Representative Dill were here, he'd say these 180,000 acres are a combination of wetlands, spruce swamps, mosquito-infested, forested willow areas, and their highest purpose is what they have always been used for: recreation, snowmobiling, ATVing, hunting, fishing, bird watching, berry picking, activities of that nature. We're not talking about development in the usual sense. We're talking about a primeval forest.
I don't know if Jill would use primeval.
probably not. That's a good call, Representative Mahoney. Thank you. Representative Loeffler, would you use the word primeval?
It's probably been harvested and replanted several times.
Probably the case. You had questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, I'm not a lawyer, but I sometimes can pretend I see issues. And the question to me would be, since we already say that in law, that if you have a conservation easement, you, the assessor, should think about that, I don't know how just the funding source is defensible as, well, oh, we didn't mean that if you got your money out of someone else, this particular pot of fund, as opposed to some other pot of funds, or you just did it out of the goodness of your heart because you really want that little piece of heaven preserved as it is for time immemorial. So, I mean, I just don't, I'm wondering about just even the precedent of us saying by revenue source, and I wonder if Mr. Hines could give us some clues on whether that's a new precedent or
Mr. Hines, I think lines 1.15 and 1.16, is that right, Representative Loeffler?
That's right.
And the implications thereof.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, it certainly seems to me that this would be somewhat different, a new situation to specifically ask the assessment to be different because the easement came about from this particular source of funding. I can't recall anything else we have like that, but we do have someone from the department in the audience who could also speak to that issue if you want further clarification.
Mr. Hagan? Good afternoon, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Hagan. I'm the director of the Property Tax Division. And, Mr. Chair, with reference to Representative Loeffler's question, I believe in my estimation it would be unprecedented. As you alluded to, there was a provision in law for a number of years that required the assessor to reduce the value of the land to reflect conservation easements. We approached the legislature and asked them to make that may reduce, because in some cases the highest and best use is not affected, which was a good change. I'm glad that was embraced. To my knowledge, there's never been a provision in law that requires assessors to not consider a conservation easement.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you. That helps, and I think we need to ponder that because. And I think this is really precedent-setting because the legacy money has, I mean, I heard a lot of testimony. I was on the committee the year that this passed, and it was a lot of people from northern Minnesota and that surrounding area who said they really, really, really wanted this. And, you know, and now we're hearing, well, yeah, except that it's kind of got some other consequences. And, you know, since Legacies continues to want to explore buying easements, we're going to have to figure out this out, not just for this situation, but for a lot of other circumstances. But I am thinking that sometimes this would actually, having an easement on it, would actually dramatically increase its value. And if the landholder didn't put all of their land into this, and I remember seeing a checkerboard map, and I don't know what was in and what was out, it was kind of surprising to me that the land that they wanted us to buy was not contiguous in many ways. If they kept out just a few parcels here and there, oh my gosh, they have the most valuable land in northern Minnesota, because they can say you're surrounded by, you know, 20,000 acres of land that's protected by easements, and nobody can ever build near you, and somebody else will, you know, I mean, and so I just don't know the complexities of this, but I'm just even thinking about what I saw on that map, and I don't know if they put everything in or most things in, or I mean, I didn't get to that level of detail, but I'm just trying to understand what the circumstance is because I think that weighs into the situation.
Mr. Welsh, please.
Mr. Chair, members. We're touching on a deeply rooted iceberg here because there's a lot of explanation that has to, your questions really covered a wide array of things. One of the issues and problems we're having, you know, is that in our tax court cases, they're alluding, you know, to the DNR's appraisals and the reduction, you know, the money that was paid out, and yet we've got copies of the two appraisals and the two that were done for these purposes, as well as the two review appraisals, and they're all redacted, and so we cannot determine what the criteria was or determine, you know, the underlying loss of or diminution of value or change in highest and best use. All of that information is redacted, and we have no, we can see the what the final result is, but we have no way of knowing how they got there. If going in the highest and best use of the property simply is as Berry lands and so on and so forth, if it's wetlands, it, the highest and best use doesn't change with the conservation easement, or excuse me, if it goes in as timberland or wetlands and the conservation comes in, it has no effect because the highest and best use is going to stay the same. When the highest and best use could conceivably be shoreland, riverland, hunting lands, in those cases, if they're giving up the right to future development, then that is a change in the highest and best use, clearly. And in the past, when there's been donations and it's been given given freely, you know, the statute reads that you know, we should value it as fee simple, but with the exception being conservation easements. And then recently, last couple of years, they changed the language from will to may, meaning the assessor should go in and take a look at that and determine whether or not, again, there was a change in the highest and best use, the conservation easement taking away part of the bundle of rights. In the particular case, I think it's only fair to point out that these people are getting money in advance. I shouldn't say these people, the Bland. And let me also add that they have every right in the world to do this, and it's a good business decision on their part to come forward and ask for a reduction in this manner. And so it's you know, they're not doing anything illegal by doing that. But basically, they're getting prepaid for a right that a future right that they're giving up. And I would suggest that the taxpayers, the rest of the taxpayers in these townships and counties, should not then have to bear the additional tax burden that they're going to end up with because we're reducing their assessed value. And again, in that one township, 67% of Spang Township in Itasca County, 67% of their income comes from these lands. So I answered part of your question, but there's a lot more I could tell you. But we don't have time to listen to it right now.
Representative Faust, then Representative Runbeck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My question is, I just want a little bit of background on the easements. Is this something they were paid for once that were purchased from them so that there isn't a steady cash flow coming for the, or is it really more of a rent where they're giving them money every year and it can be canceled by the landowner at any time?
Mr. Welsh.
It's a one-time payment, and let me point out they can still use it, the lands, for timber management or, you know, timber production. They retain the tax credits, excuse me, the carbon credits. They retain the wetlands credits. They retain the right to use it for gravel extraction, and so I lost my train of thought here, and I apologize for that. Does that answer your question,
Representative Faust? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anselk, this bill, if passed, who else will it apply to? I mean, it seems like it has precedence. Yet I hear we're talking about a certain section of acres, 187,000 acres. But won't it have a lot greater applicability?
Mr. Welsh or Representative Anselk?
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, on behalf of Representative Dill, I'll try to take a stab at answering you. Most certainly it would affect the current legacy-funded conservation easement before us with Blandin, UPM, Kimini. And I imagine a court or lawyers will decide sometime in the future if it would apply to additional conservation easements. But from my perspective, of course it would. I remember clearly in 08 when this was done. And I remember the Nature Conservancy and the DNR and the Minnesota Deer Hunters and UPM Kimini and everybody singing Kumbaya about how wonderful and important this was going to be and how we were going to preserve access. And if we didn't do this, access was in jeopardy to the people. And we were told no change in market value, no change, no negative impact on property taxes to the local units of government. And Representative Dilwood have said that.
Representative Runbeck and then Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps to Mr. Hagan, but you know, a one-size-fits-all seems sort of strange to me. I mean, wouldn't each property and each you know, conservation easement warrant its own assessment, and it may be different?
Representative Enzo?
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, I don't think either I or Representative Dill could answer that question.
Dear.
Representative Runbeck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, this then seems to be a lot of questions about this.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. Representative Van Zels, this is an iron range bill. And if there's one thing I've learned in the legislature, that an iron range bill has two groups of people affected. It's the people who are getting stuck with something and the people who are doing the sticking. So tell me, Representative Van Zels, who are those? Who are the stickies and who are the stickers in this bill?
Mr. Representative Chair, can you channel Representative Dill?
Succinctly, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, of course, Representative Dill would say it's the people who we're attempting to protect. And at times, it's at the peril of others.
That would be the traditional range position, Representative Garofalo. I think he didn't identify corporations by name, but I think you can go there.
So, Mr. Chairman, the chief beneficiary that would be the stickler. Would be the proletariat. Right? That's what we're looking for, Representative Anthony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Hagan, please.
Mr. Chair, in answer to Representative Runbeck's question, it would apply differently to different properties. And to be clear, it only applies to the properties acquired by the Lasard Sands funds. It is specific to that, and it would, in my estimation, apply to any future acquisitions as well. But it would vary from property to property, depending on what the highest and best use was. In some cases, the highest and best maybe would not be altered. In the case, I know in the case of some of the Goose Refuge land out in Lac La Parle and some of those areas, the highest and best use, once the development rights were surrendered, it still did not reduce the highest and best use, or even the highest and best use into the foreseeable future. So it would Representative Runbeck, it would depend on property to property and what the highest and best use was now and going into the future.
All right. Thank you. Any last questions? Anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify or add clarity to House File 1161? Representative Erickson, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Welch, it seems to me that this still leaves a dilemma for valuing or for your assessor's office, because as you said, when you assess its parcel by parcel, and they need to be contiguous if they're going to be one lump. So what dilemma are we solving or aren't we? I mean, if this goes forth, I think you're off the hook. But otherwise, what happens in the future if more land is purchased through the Heritage Outdoor Heritage Fund?
I believe the bill is asking that if they're going to receive public monies for future to pay off or buy them in advance for future benefits, that they're going to agree to pay the property tax based on current highest and best use and based again upon each individual parcel of land, which is the way we are instructed to value them for tax purposes.
Okay. All right, Representative Van Zels, any last comments by Representative Dill?
None other than Representative Dill, thanks you for your patience and good questions and discussion, and asks that you consider to lay this over for possible inclusion in the bill.
With that, Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 1161 be held over for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Faust, would you like to move House File 1246 be before the Division for possible inclusion in the Division report?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1246.
Thank you. Representative Van Zyls, you don't have to channel anyone else except yourself on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1246 calls for a study of a program on the Iron Range affecting the seven counties of the Taconite Assistance Area, commonly referred to as Iron Range fiscal disparities. It is almost identical to what the legislature did in 2010, authorizing a study of fiscal disparities in the metropolitan area. The reason why I have brought this forward is this has been in effect since 1998. There have been questions raised by property taxpayers, local government officials, and others about the efficacy and efficiency and merit of this program. Some have advocated its repeal. Some have advocated changes. I thought that a study would be the best course of action at this time. This study would be done by the Department of Revenue. It would be completed by February 1, 2015. And with the information compiled by the study, we could better make useful judgments as to how to proceed. And that's the bill.
All right. Is the department in the room? Ms. Van Mosch. You're being asked to do things. Could you identify yourself for the tape and
Mr. Chair, members, Susan Van Mosch with the Department of Revenue. And the department was asked to do a similar study for fiscal disparities in the metropolitan area. I believe it was 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, and that study was released a year ago. For that study, there was the language actually between the two bills is very similar in terms of what is being asked to be studied. And for that metropolitan area bill, the legislature did provide an appropriation of $100,000, and we did contract with a consultant to conduct that study. We contracted with a group called Tischler Weiss out of Maryland, and they completed the analysis for us. And that is the background of that group. The other body discussed the bill this morning, and I think there might be some other ideas maybe about what this study might cover, and so we would be more than willing to work with members to have a further dialogue about what exactly would be analyzed and what the best way would be to do that.
Ms. Van Mosch, then is it the luck of the Iron Range that there's a zero fiscal note on this?
Mr. Chair, I think there are just the fiscal note just has not been completed yet.
All right. Mr. Hines.
That's all.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that I think that the Metro study was actually funded by the pool. We did a separate allocation from the pool to pay for that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Hines, that is correct.
Ms. Van Mosch, if this were to go forward, would you be looking to hire, again, outside consultants or do this analysis in-house?
Mr. Chair, I think some of that might depend on the scope of the study. If it was scoped as it is written currently, I think we would be encouraging you to look at the ability to hire a consultant. If the scope was changed and narrowed, I think then we could talk about whether the department could do it in-house or not.
Thank you. Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and members, if you look at line 2.2 of the bill, we have a couple of blanks in that line, and that's why you have on your revenue estimate fiscal 14 and 15 amounts are unknown, 16, 17, zero, because we anticipated the study to be appropriated for it within the biennium.
Thank you very much. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzels. just, you know, maybe don't want to go on the record here on this, and I would respect that, but I will tell you, you know, I carried a bill that got the fiscal disparities studied, and Representative Loon had one as well. So I kept, you know, trying to get it studied, and just the mere thought of looking at it struck terror in the hearts, bipartisanly, of colleagues. And so I kept trying to do that, and then finally in 2010, I believe, when we did pass it, I think I chose Representative Loon's bill, even though I was chairing then. Representative Marquardt, I think, put it in his division report. That's how I'm trying to remember how it played. So anyhow, we do the study, right? And the study shows, aha, you know, this has been around in the metro since 1971. Much older program, and yet not a lick, not a word has been changed. So imagine if we had never changed LGA, never changed county program A, never changed the circuit breaker, never changed the homestead credit. But nope, we can't change fiscal disparities because one person might lose one nickel. And so bipartisanly, we watch the legislature stand united against change, since the majority of people are winners and just a very small subset of us are sort of losers. And I think I can speak for Representative Loon a little bit, maybe not as well as you could speak for Representative Dill. But I think, you know, we were trying to acknowledge that even with keeping the program, not trying to eliminate it, you know, change could be warranted. And indeed, the study happened, and we found that there are all kinds of things that we should look at. So, you know, we've got a study, and nobody has the political will to change anything. So Representative Loon has another bill, and we're going to be hearing that, but can you just, I mean, maybe you don't want to, can you just, you know, what are the odds that if the study shows something, that there's going to be any political courage for the folks, because, you know, we've got, I don't know how many cities that represent, or Mr. Hines could tell us how many people are in the metro. It's like 150 cities, or I don't know what it is, and so it's like 130 winners and 20 losers or something like that. So you can imagine trying to get the votes to make this happen. You know, do you think a result of your study could in any way get the rest of your colleagues there, if they're winners under the program and you're a loser, that they'll won't change their minds? Or if you're a winner, you know, I don't even know what your district is, but can you just comment on, you know, maybe you don't have four standard deviations of variety like we do in the metro. Maybe you're real close. I don't know. Maybe Mr. Hines is better equipped to explain to us how close the disparities are currently. But do you think there's the political will to put the legislature through the process, get a great study, and put it on a shelf because no one, you know, wants to do anything?
Representative Ansels.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, thank you for asking. First off, I would not be authoring this legislation if I thought it was an exercise in futility. Secondly, our delegation from northeastern Minnesota is quite consensus-oriented.
Since when?
They're oriented, it's just their process to consensus.
And we are processing this, and we are now a delegation of eight. We have now added Representative Radinovich from Aiken County, emphasize Aiken County, and there is great interest and consensus in finding out where we are with fiscal disparities, and quite frankly, balancing it with how the taconite production tax is utilized and spent on the citizens of the seven counties in the taconite assistance area. So I'm quite confident that we'll get a good study, and our opportunity to make good, meaningful change for the citizens is quite bright.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Ansels, 2 years to do the study? Am I seeing that correctly?
Yes.
Long, slow process?
Long, slow, and complicated.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Schill,
I think Mr. Hines will agree with me that the process, it's usually a contract basis, and to have a selection and then gather the information and process it, it commonly would exceed 12 months. Mm-hmm. So you would have a carry forward there going into the second year of the biennium.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1246? Representative Metza. Well, we get to test the consensus model right here.
No, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I did want to point out Representative Lencheski brought up a great point. We just want to make sure they're paying us enough, which is why we're jumping in here. So.
Representative Lencheski.
And for the committee's, you know, benefit, as Representative Markford and I were just talking, I mean, it is different because it's funded. They have a funding source, so they can increase the source and redistribute. Mm-hmm. In the metro, it's a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. It's true winners and true losers, so it's a little bit different, but just interesting to hear.
All right. Anyone else in the audience? Representative Van Zels, any closing comments regarding House File 1246?
Thank you for your time, patience, and good questions, and I ask that you consider including this in the omnibus bill.
All right. With that, Representative Faust? Faust renews his motion that House File 1246 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thanks for visiting the committee, Representative Van Zels. Representative Metza, I don't think you need to leave the seat you're in.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Metza, Representative Lencheski, would you like to move House File 1327 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus report? Thank you very much. Representative Metza to House File 1327.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 1327 is a bill that amends legislation that we passed in the mid-80s up on the range, as I'm sure we've had this discussion before, but I'll remind you again, at the IRRRB, we collect property tax essentially in the form of, or differently than you do down here, yeah, in the form of a production tax, and we distribute those funds through the IRRRB. And so without going too far into the weeds there, I'm sure I'll get someone like Representative Garofalo to hit me on the IRRRB here today. TAC night companies did not participate in the referendums during that time, and a formula was devised to equate in dollars to referendums that other property owners had passed. And this doesn't involve any general fund dollars, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. And in the original legislation, net tax capacity over 1.8% was subtracted, causing our districts to lose some money. In an attempt to keep property taxes stable and to keep the programs, I appreciate Representative Lencheski moving the bill forward.
All right. You have a visitor. Good afternoon.
Senator Dicklich is here with us.
Chairman Ron Dicklich, Executive Director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, and I'm just here. Actually, that was my legislation back in 1985 to answer any questions of how that works or what we are doing with this legislation. And Representative Metza did a good job of explaining it. It was an attempt to apply a dollar amount to the TAC Knights who don't participate in any referendum. So when we have special referendums there, they don't pay anything more than they do in their production tax that gets distributed in various funds to the schools. And it was a one-time issuance of figuring out what their participation would have been in a referendum. And you can tell that by the dating of the language in the bill, we struck out a part that what could be used to fund outcome-based education, which at that point was going to be the great salvation of public education, which, of course, that's come and gone many years ago. And early childhood education was something that we were trying to fund up there, and that's basically what they use it for now. And Representative Metz is right. As your net tax capacity goes up, it subtracts the amount that you got from that referendum. And
Mr. Dicklich, hold on. Somebody, I'm not pointing fingers, Representative Garofalo, but I will soon. But okay.
Okay. But anyway,
thank you, Mr. Dicklich.
His attempt to keep the amount of taconite money in the schools that was originally designed for, and to keep other property taxes so they didn't have to raise them any more than they've had to raise them over the past few years, and to maintain our programs that these dollars had funded.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Metzel, or former Representative Dicklich, the senators, excuse me, weren't you once a rep too? And then you acceded to the Senate? No, I'm sorry. Okay. So the distribution formula has been based on the tax base. Is that correct? So now if you take from the Taconite Environmental Fund and from the Dougie Johnson Economic Fund, you can give an even amount to every school district? Is that the way it is?
Mr. Dicklich.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, yes, it would continue on the per pupil basis as it is right now. And you're right, those monies would come from another fund. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson.
Go ahead.
It would come from those funds, and we may look at some other funds to take that from, but the way this is worded.
Representative Erickson, if you can be heard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, that actually comes out of a different fund, or it may come out of the same fund, but not the same dollars that are going for that.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson.
So, there's no loss of expenditures from these two funds for something specific. No. These sit around a slush fund.
Well,
Mr. Dicklich.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the Doug Johnson Fund is there for economic development, and it builds up over the years. So there, I wouldn't call it a slush fund, but it's there for when we have economic development projects to help fund. And of late, there's been money taken out of there to promote our education,
four-year
programs, and other things, which is we view as a plus in economic development.
All right, Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that this money is allocated on a per-student basis. Do you know exactly how much that is per student?
Mr. Dicklich?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Post, it's $175 per pupil.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, if you'd be willing, I think if Mr. Hines could answer a question on, I'm just trying to understand, are we moving from a capacity base to a per pupil base, and is it something that gets equalized in any way?
Mr. Hines, can you help us?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, the basic formula right now says you get $175 times pupil units, and right now then there's a subtraction for tax base,
right,
that they're taking out, but that subtraction is only 1.8% of tax capacity, so a fairly small percentage. And in fact, we don't even fund referendum levies with net tax capacity anymore, so it's kind of a mismatch anyway. But this would take a presumably some kind of an equalization piece out of it and make it just straight per pupil. But the equalization piece is kind of clumsy and awkward, maybe because it's using the wrong measure anyway. And so,
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senator Dicklich, so on net, there's really no losers here. We're not going to hear later that somebody's a loser. Okay.
Mr. Dicklich?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lukinski, yes, everybody gets the same amount per pupil.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1327? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, while that person, if there is one, is coming forward, when you mentioned 1985, my question is this the issue that we had before us where it had about a billion pennies in it? Do you remember that? You had an education bill that dealt with some distribution of funds on the Iron Range that was listed as pennies. You don't remember that.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Dickler?
Charleston, I remember a lot of things that we did together, but I don't remember that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Remember what?
I remember a lot of things that you and I did together for the people of Minnesota, but I don't remember that.
No, it was a very strange bill, members. It dealt with some distribution of tax dollars, and it was listed as pennies. And the whole bill was loaded with these lines, and we asked at the time if there wasn't some way of modernizing that or something to eliminate.
Chairman, Representative Carlson, I'm going to guess that you're probably on the Tax Committee at the same time, or maybe the Appropriations Committee, but I don't remember that.
I thought we dealt with it, but anyway, I just the strangest bill, Madam Chair, being the chair taxes, and Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
You could ever imagine just the way it was crafted.
In pennies.
In pennies.
Oh. All right. Representative Erickson, well, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question, but to Representative Metza, this is a way to increase funding for your schools, correct?
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Representative Metza, any closing comments?
I would just like to thank the Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank members of the committee for their consideration and moving this forward, and thank again Representative Lincheski for carrying the motion.
All right. With that, Representative Lincheski renews her motion that House File 1327 be held over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. And Representative Dean. The chair will move House File 1508 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Dean, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
I've moved the bill.
Okay. This is what I would say is a very simple bill, although some of you may want to make it complicated. What this bill does is it puts the Target Center on par with Excel Center, PCF Bank Stadium, Target Field, and the Metrodome, as well as the new Viking Stadium as it comes forward relative to how it's taxed.
All right. You have a guest.
I have a guest.
Councilmember Glidden?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Excuse my voice today. Sorry. It sounds worse than it is. I'm Elizabeth Glidden. I'm a Minneapolis City Council member, and I'm here on behalf of this bill. And I'll be just very brief. We appreciate that there are efforts right now with the bill that this is amending to think about how we think of multiple facilities at one time, how we're going to manage them. We think this is part of that whole philosophy. We have one facility now of the major facilities in the Twin Cities that is subject to property tax. We are asking for this exemption to essentially level the playing field for this facility. We think this timing is just appropriate, A, because the underlying bill is moving forward, and B, because TIF districts are expiring on this property too.
Right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1508? Questions from members? Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many dollars of property tax is the Target Center currently paying, and how are you going to make up for that lost revenue?
Councilmember Glidden.
So right now, again, it's subject to the TIF district, and so because of that, there aren't property taxes that are going to the state, of course. There are, however, taxes that will be paid by, there's a restaurant that is operating within the facility, and there's also a health club, and so they will be paying property taxes. When you say how are we going to make up for that revenue, are you talking about the city, or how does that, I mean, as with other facilities, I think of this nature, that's kind of part of the negotiation between the city, which owns the city.
Nobody move. Any other questions, Representative Faust? Any other questions from committee members? Any closing statements? Representative Dean, is that the closing statement on this bill? All right. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1508 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Members, the majority released their budget targets today. This afternoon, they included a target for this committee of $250 million in property tax relief for Minnesotans, which is a strong statement and a strong response to, I think, what we heard at the doors and in community events throughout the campaign and since the session has begun. The roadmap for the future as we look to the construction of the division report is tomorrow. We've got a number of bills coming forward. We have this room until 6 p.m. If we do not complete the full agenda at that time, we will adjourn or recess briefly and relocate to... We have it till 5:45. Okay, 15 minutes earlier, talk faster. We will then adjourn to room 500 north for the rest of any bills. That will be our last formal meeting of hearing bills from members for possible inclusion in the division report. We will return from the Easter Passover break on April 2nd, I believe it is. And during our regular committee time, we'll walk through the proposed division report. On Wednesday, we'll come back, tentatively take testimony, and then mark up the bill. That may, depending on testimony and amendments, that may also take us into the evening, and staff is working on securing room or rooms for that. And time? Room 10. Room 10. Oh, staff is... as ever, ahead. With that, any questions? We have minutes. Representative Torkelson, would you be so good as to move the minutes from the March 12th meeting? You were here, according to the minutes. Thank you. Representative Torkelson moves approval of the March 12th, 2013 minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. 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 Opposed. Motion prevails. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much.